Kicking off here in the Fan Run Studios. Let's hit some Hour 3 headlines. Cam, what do you got?
All right. We still haven't got to it. The biggest news of the day.
What's the biggest news of the day?
U.S. soccer. Men's and women's teams are now equal. Equal pay lawsuit and stuff has come to a close as, the women have won basically the lawsuit, the complaints, or whatever you want to call it. And they are now getting equal pay in a couple different regards, actually, too. They are now get the same paychecks as the guys for their international games, stuff like that. That was different originally. So now there's just a baseline paycheck there. Also, probably the biggest thing here, especially since the women have a tons more success, but the men get paid out a lot more money. The World Cup, they're basically taking the winnings from the Men's and Women's World Cup and they're putting it into a pool and then dividing it out equally to everybody there. Also, I think it was the money that FIFA gives out to, the national team, stuff like that. They're also pulling that together and dividing it out equally. Men still can make more money in situations as if, like, they play more games in a season, things like that, obviously. Mm-hmm. And there's also different bonuses and stuff you can put into the contracts so the, big-name players can make more money and things like that. But, in the base level of everything, it is now equal pay.
Credit, I guess, to the men for just being like, let's get this done.
Yeah.
I will say that it probably helps that most of them are going to make more money, with the rest of their careers.
Yeah.
Right? Pretty much every MLS contract is going to be bigger.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the guys that are now, the U.S. national team, you would hope as you progress, even further down the line, that almost all of Team USA will be on playing international soccer somewhere and getting big checks. Obviously, Christian Pulisic barely needs the $450,000 that they're going to get from the U.S. men's or U.S. national team or whatever it's called. He's going to have his money elsewhere. And hopefully, like I said, as we progress further, more and more players will continue to play international and get big checks. So, credit to the men for just being like.
I mean, they just surrendered it, right? They didn't.
Yeah, they're just like, we're with it.
Yeah, fine. I mean, I think it was just a case of them realizing that, hey, even though you probably win in the court of law, you're going to lose the court of public opinion because we
haven't. That's more important in 2022.
Because we haven't actually had any success in the World Cup in a while the women's team's consistently delivered. So,
mm-hmm.
I mean, sure, it makes sense that we would make more since we make more money. But
well, please note, I think that the men's national team would win the World Cup if they got to play in the women's field, just for the record.
Possibly.
Yeah. I think they'd win the World Cup if they got to play in the women's
field. They would. That's for sure.
Yeah. They still get that opportunity. So, the women ain't winning the men's World Cup, either. They're not qualifying either. So,
Yeah, but I.
We don't need to put down the men's team.
I think they were just like, we know that we're gonna get judged for this, even though we're actually right. So let's just give them the money.
Well, the men don't want to be the bad guys because they're not the ones making the rules. Yeah. The men's players are just like, whatever, it's fine.
Yeah, they make enough money elsewhere. Again, like you were saying, so I guess it's probably smart to just let them have it.
I gotta say, shout out to the women because they made this their plight and they won. They got it done. And that's regardless of how you feel and whether or not you think they should be paid the same and all of that, I don't really care. It's just more of a win for the women saying, mm-hmm. This is what we're going to do. This is what we're fighting for. And they got it done. I don't know if the rest of the world is going to follow suit because this is just the U.S. that's agreeing to this, right?
I highly doubt it.
I don't know if the Brazilian women are going to look around and be like, hey, now we want equal pay, or if they were already getting equal pay. I don't know.
A lot of other countries, once we started our lawsuits, already moved forward and had already approved equal pay. We're just, as usual, behind. But,
Are we really behind?
On that.
Equal pay still isn't even logical. It just is.
It just is what it is. You're playing the same sport, I guess.
All right.
I get where you're coming from as far as viewership or sponsorship money, things like that. But also, our women's national team is more marketable than our men's team.
Well, I just think it's I think it's just the perception of having the same boss and working for the same company. I think that's the issue.
Yeah, because it's every country has their own separate pay structure for
So I think, like, the, you know, you could say that they're not equal and, you know, they don't bring in the same amount of money, and you could talk about the, you know, more marketable or whatever. I think it's just, like, if the boss is divvying out different pay, that's where they probably got in trouble since they're under, like, the same, like, kind of CBA and...
Yeah, absolutely. That,
Either way.
But yeah, big for the women. Big win for them.
So FIFA also announced that the entire bonus pool for the 2022 World Cup in Qatar will be $400 million. Mm-hmm. Of course, we know the women's tournament in Australia in 2023 is $60
million. Yeah, so that's why it's huge for them.
Yeah. In the last World Cup cycle, the last place men's team won more prize money than the first place women's team.
Yep.
Which, I mean, I don't know what the national viewership is, but it seems like, you know, we care about the men's World Cup more.
I mean, yeah.
Now, maybe, yeah, I mean... Just in the world.
I've accidentally watched more women's World Cup games than men's just because they've been in it a lot more.
I would say that's not accurate for me, but it's probably not that far off because, like you said, the men haven't played in so long.
I'll watch the U.S. women in the championship of the World Cup if they make it there.
Okay.
Maybe for, like, the second half or maybe the whole game.
Both teams will receive an equal cut of ticket revenue. So for the USFF. Players will receive it. Yeah, whatever. Okay, so like they got their equal money, and it basically it was coming out to what, like $450,000? I feel like is what the kind of estimate was, like the
For like a year, what they could make, yeah,
right?
With possibly making more in World Cup years, obviously, because the World Cup pool. But yeah,
along that same line, I guess since we're talking soccer, we got I think Chelsea. We had talked about them.
Yeah,
I believe we talked. Well, no, we were talking about Messi, so never mind. We're talking about PSG. Chelsea announces their USA tour, the Pride of London, coming to Vegas on July 16th.
Okay.
Charlotte, July 20th, and Orlando, Florida, to play Arsenal on July 23rd. Which I don't know, again, like if this will be like the A teams, B teams, C teams, or what. Like I don't know exactly what they're going to be bringing or whatever. But
who are they playing in Charlotte? Is it
Charlotte?
Also?
They're playing Charlotte FC.
Oh, okay.
And then who is Club America?
Maybe it's just like an all star. It could be just an all star kind of.
It's got a that's what they're playing in Vegas. I don't know.
I don't know off the top of my head. I don't.
It's got a little dash above the E, so I didn't know if that was like a Spanish club or
whatever. Maybe it is then. I don't know. Not super familiar with that club.
Okie doke. Any other headlines?
Yeah. Dan Orlovsky will call NFL games with Steve Levy and Lewis Riddick for ESPN.
Is this just like the other Monday Night Football games? Like the doubleheaders? Because, I mean, like, we know Joe Buck and Troy Aikman are calling the main games. Are they doing? They're doing two telecasts too for someone, but I guess that'd be the Peyton, the Manning cast, right? Or do we know which games we're talking about here?
For the number two TV booth.
So imagine that's when they do double headers.
Yeah, five quarters. So they're gonna do just a handful of games.
Apparently, Dan got called and tried to get poached by Fox Sports and stayed at ESPN. So this was part of his new contract, was getting to call some more games. I mean, I feel like I've liked him whenever he does college games.
He really got a 5-day-a-week NFL show on Fox, apparently.
There's, like, hosting it?
Yeah.
By himself? Or what? Like, being the main guy?
He's just fronted, so I'm guessing there's some other people there.
I mean, he's already kind of got a show on ESPN every day, doesn't he? Isn't he on NFL Live,
like,
every day?
Yeah, he does.
I mean, I feel like he gets a lot of exposure in the NFL.
And he'll get on, like, First Take and stuff like that, too.
They just really want to prop him up to be, like, one of their next guys, and I just don't think he's good enough.
You don't think Dan's good enough?
He pisses me off.
Okay.
I remember I think he talks down to people too much.
Okay.
Like the viewer. Like I remember before a Georgia Tech game, they had him describing what the option was. It's like an entire 5-minute segment. And I was just like, why are you doing this?
Maybe kids don't know. Kids haven't had the NCAA video game to grow up with to learn the speed option or the power option. I mean, that's how I figured out what the option was playing NCAA football. Kids haven't had that the last... 10 years? 12 years?
It's been since 14.
I don't know, like, what the TV guy... I mean, you might have a better clue since you're a radio guy that does, like, play-by-play. Like, I don't know, like, are you supposed to be treating them as if they're noobs to the game? Like, new kids? Like, you're trying to get the 8-year-olds? Or are you trying to talk to them like they actually, like, have a grasp of football?
Yeah, you don't want to get, like, advanced, like, oh, hey, you know, they're... you know, running
sure,
A-gap power with so-and-so doing so-and-so, but if he reads the defensive end pinching here, then he's going to, you know, change his technique from a skip pool to a this pool. Like, you're not going to get that advanced, but,
right.
You know, you're not going to dumb it down too much either. You just keep it simple, and if you're using, I guess, like, football terms, sometimes you explain it. Like, you know, like, hey, this has been really successful with the Bucks sweep tonight. Bucks sweep, you know, when you pull the two guards, one will kick out and one will pull up through and be the lead blocker because the defensive end has been crashing towards the line of scrimmage. Like, you keep it simple. Like, you don't want to dumb it down too much, but you don't make it too complicated either.
I still don't feel like you'd have a problem just being like, hey, here's what an option is, kids. I don't know.
Maybe if he's doing the Nick broadcast.
I also just don't think he's good.
I mean, I just didn't like him because he was always caping for Carson Wentz last year. But he also was caving for Matthew Stafford because that was his boy from his time in Detroit, and he ended up being right about that one. So, I don't know. I don't mind, Dan. Good batch of headlines. Let's go to break. Let's talk sports on Fan Run Radio. I guess we never finished the college football coaching rankings, huh?
People out there are dying, John, trying to figure out who the top 15 are.
Can we just reiterate how dumb of a take it is for you to say that every school should be aiming for a national championship and Kentucky should be aiming for
at
a
least
national championship
in football?
If you're
in the Power Five, you should be.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's funny how you give that caveat since you're a Group Five guy and you know they'll never win a national championship.
No, I'm saying,
but at the same time,
you're like,
let them play football.
I'm saying, let
the Group Five play because those guys matter too.
No, I'm saying if you're in the Power Five, you definitely should be. If you're not. Like, I understand
Kansas football and Vanderbilt football should have no aspirations to win a national championship. They should want to make a bowl game.
In the immediate future.
No, they should just want to make a bowl game. They should just want to be able to make money. Their goal should actually probably be just to make money to fund
to be
like
profitable.
The other. Yeah, like, to like fund the rest of like some activities.
Again, it's not like if I'm sitting there and I'm in charge of Vanderbilt football, I'm thinking, how do we win a national championship? I'm thinking, how do we make steps as a football program to get to a point sometime in the next 20 years where then we can talk about how do we get to being a national championship team.
No.
I think it's all, I mean, you know, some teams,
sabotage every other team in the SEC mm-hmm. and get them to fold. Like just
use your brain power.
Yeah.
Some teams
start
pass.
Snitching and get the death penalty
again,
for every other
some
team.
Some teams' paths are different than others, you know, for Georgia.
Yes, paths are very different.
For Georgia, you're sitting there thinking, how do we get to a national championship?
The path there was pretty
same
even.
Thing we had
easy.
Last year. You know, if you're Kentucky, I think you're getting closer to getting to the path
no,
to getting
not.
To a national championship.
You're not getting
they
any closer
can't
to
find
a
the path.
You're winning 10 games.
You have no shot to win a national championship.
That's not true.
They just don't.
It's not true.
I mean, again, if everyone, like, planes crash and We Are Marshall happens and COVID wipes out another team and death penalty wipes out 35 more teams and the Group 5 folds as well because I feel like some Group 5 teams are going to beat those teams as well. Like, yeah, sure. Maybe their goal could then.
I mean, okay, who's like a Kentucky in a different conference, like a TCU?
They're never going to win a national championship.
They could.
How?
By being good enough at football,
do all the other
close, but they weren't going to get there because they weren't in the Power Five yet because they weren't built for it.
Well, they had the one year in the Big 12 where they were good and like, mm-hmm. oh, but then they're like, oh, it's TCU and Baylor. Like, no, sorry, yeah. you don't get to see at the big boy table, yeah. which is ultimately like
even if I mean, the closest they got were when they weren't Power Five when they were like the Boise TCU days when those yeah. teams were good.
Well, I was just thinking the one year they were like number five in the yeah. country or whatever.
No,
even
I didn't remember that.
Even if I'm an FCS team, I'm still thinking how about winning a national championship
in the FBS.
Yes. Stuff crazy.
Yeah. I don't know.
Is that a 100-year plan?
Look at UCF.
Yeah. There was an they could have gone undefeated for the next 10 years and not got a chance to go to the playoff.
No. I'm saying.
Yes,
like,
look at UCF. They went undefeated and everyone's like, nah, we're all right here. You don't actually have a chance of winning the national championship. Sorry. Yes, look at UCF.
They really need the playoff to expand to 16 and then go in the field for like 3 years in a row.
Okay, now if you want to tell me – now, Charlie, I will give you this.
Here's the argument that I was going to make with UCF before you get to your argument. 1996, they're sitting there as an FCS football team. Here we are 25 years later, and they're a year away from joining a Power 5 conference.
Well, I think their situation's different than like a Kentucky or almost any other FCS school. They're the biggest school in their state that's talent rich. Like, they're the biggest university in that state.
Again,
they were built to be good at football.
In a 30 or 25 year span, they went from an FCS team to a Power 5 football team. And I'm sure in 1996 they weren't thinking, hey, how do we win a national championship?
No. That's completely fine. Like, if you want to say that UCF and even Houston have better chances than Kentucky to win a national championship, I'm not going to argue with you.
I'm not arguing about Kentucky at all here anymore. I'm arguing that every team's goal, no matter what, should be to take steps to continue to get closer to a national championship.
If you are UCF and you are in a talent-rich state and you're the biggest school, and if you are Houston and you are a talent-rich state and you're the biggest – I mean, I don't know if they're the biggest school, but they're in the biggest city, which I guess Dallas is kind of past them, so I don't know if SMU will eventually catch them. But, like, sure, if you have other paths you can take, like a North Dakota State getting in, like they could be like, hey, let's get to D1.
Win most group of five conferences.
That's fine, but like if you're like, hey, we got other moves we could actually make to get here and then become a Power 5 school, like a Cincinnati. Like, Cincinnati has a better chance of winning a national championship than Kentucky because they have more moves to take. But schools like Kentucky and Kansas and TCU, who are now maxed out, and, you know, Vanderbilt, who are already Power 5, like, there's no other move for them to make. They don't get to have another
coaching. Investing more money.
Not everyone has the money cannon. Money cannon Kentucky is unique.
Kentucky has the money.
I think UCF's a
Kentucky'd have
situation.
To be like, hey, we don't like basketball anymore. And then, like, we're actually going to have to still get way more money.
If you're an SEC school, you have unlimited money.
No, you don't, because everyone has money. Like, if they offered Nick Saban $20 million, Alabama would say, well, we'll offer him $21 million.
Okay, but you could.
Like, how are you going to poach the best coach? Like,
what if you just went to Ryan Day?
Oh, he just got an extension.
He's going to outbid Ohio State?
Yeah, he just got
the Big Ten's got money, too. Like, that's the thing.
I'm sure
all
if
these...
you're Ohio State, you'd be like, hold up. I would not play. I'm not going to pay Ryan Day $16 million. I can just go hire another really good coach for Ohio State.
They also have a money printer that can just print the salary they need.
They just gave him an extension through 2028, and his salary is now $9.5 million.
But I also don't know if Ryan Day's not getting Kentucky to a national championship.
I don't know.
We don't even know if he's a
he
good coach.
He hasn't even won Ohio State a national championship yet.
I'm saying, but in the national championship conversation.
No. Nick Saban, maybe. If you gave Nick Saban 10 years of youth back, and he just grew up a Kentucky fan, and he decided, hey, I'm going to do that, then sure, maybe. If there's a kid up there that's the next Nick Saban that just bleeds blue, maybe. But in the sake of, like, firing Mark Stoops to go get that guy, I think that's asinine. And if I'm Kentucky, I'm just happy finishing over 500 and being nationally relevant to at least, like, be in bowl games. And, like, it's a big successful year. But, like, there's a reason, like, money doesn't solve everything. And, like, the number 15 coach on this list is James Franklin. If you believe that Tennessee tried to give him money, even he looked and said, nah, we're good.
Yeah, but you can just give him more money.
Maybe. But again, like, Penn State
keep
was like
offering money until he says, actually, I will take it.
But then Penn State was like, you know what, we're just going to keep our coach. Because we don't like hiring coaches, because hiring coaches is actually hard, and, like, these guys don't have a very high success rate. That's James Franklin comes in at number 15. Paul Christ at 14. Kirk Ferentz at number 13. So I guess they're like, hey, we got three Big Ten schools here. We don't know what the hell to do with them. They're sort of like Mark Stoops, but I guess they're a little bit better. So, like, we're going to throw them ahead of him in the list.
Yeah, baby. Look who's still kicking. Kirk.
He's still going.
Let's go.
I was wrong. I thought they were going to cancel him, but I was just like, nope. It's just the strength coach. And the rest of the racism that Kirk Ferentz overlooked, we don't really care. And they were rewarded with a pretty good season last year. Matt Campbell.
I would still go. I would go Paul Christ over Ferentz and Campbell.
Campbell, maybe. I mean, Kirk's been doing it for so long, man. I don't know. I feel like they just roll out and win 9 games a year. I mean, Wisconsin kind of does the same, but, like,
I just love Paul Christ.
I give Kirk more credit than Chris for building it, so I guess I would have him slightly above
That's
him.
Fair.
But, like, I don't.
That's a fair way to look at it.
Dave Aranda is now ahead of Matt Campbell, which Matt Campbell went from the man, so now, like, not even, like, in the top 3 in his, like, own conference, top 4 in his own conference.
Dave Aranda jumped 51 spots to 62.
Oh, wow. Yeah. The highest climber 62. In history.
Do Holy we cow. Think that that's an overreaction to one good year?
Well, I think it looks crazy because he was ranked 62 last year because he was a first-time head coach, right? So, like, in his first year, he proves, like, he goes out and wins the wins his division and almost wins the conference.
Almost made the playoffs.
Like. Yeah.
But do we still think that that's too much of a reaction for a 1-year sample size?
Sure, sure. Like, maybe it should be more like in the Mel Tucker range, like in the high 20s right there, like at 22 or 23.
Is there anyone, like, behind him that you would pick to start to be the head coach of your team tomorrow rather than him?
It seems wild to me that James Franklin is now behind Dave Aranda. Like, I would rather have Mario Cristobal than Dave Aranda as well. Maybe even Sam Pittman, but, like, Aranda's was a really, really good defensive coordinator, and, like, could he be the next Kirby Smart? A guy that, you know, gets a chance and is actually, like, really, really good, and I don't know if he'll be able to recruit at Baylor the way Kirby Smart recruited at Georgia.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if his dream job's Baylor either. Like, I don't know if he'll be there. Like, I don't feel like it's a perfect fit. But, like, you could tell me that he's a top 15 coach next year, and I wouldn't be shocked. So, you know, there's a couple people, but I don't have a huge problem with it. But he has to do it in year two. Like, I could easily see him going back to the pack a little bit and being, like, number 25 next year.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mike Gundy just keeps rolling. Jim Harbaugh at number 9. I guess it's fine. Kyle Whittingham cracks the top 10 for the first time.
Finally. Okay, he's enough. Deserved to be top 10 for years.
I feel like he's a little overrated now that he's in the top 10. Personally.
He
was in a better position of being underrated. Now I feel like he's a little overrated. Brian Kelly at number 7. Your boy Ryan Day at number 6. Welcome back to the top 5 for Jimbo Fisher. Which I think, you know, he's got
a national championship. Like, that's enough, sure, but
one of the only guys with a, you know, an active coach with a national championship. That's
also
a big deal.
Kind of underachieved in the last.
What'd they finish last year?
5 years of coaching.
What'd they finish last year? 8-4.
Yeah, like they were a team.
Beat Alabama though.
But people were talking about them winning 10 games,
yeah,
or 11 games, mm-hmm, or being in the college football playoffs.
The COVID year, they were what? They were finished number 5 in the country, right?
Yeah, I think they went 8-2, or whatever it was.
Recruiting wise, I mean, he just had a historic class.
I'd have him at like 9.
I have no problem with him at 5. Of the guys behind him, I assume you're putting Ryan Day.
I put Ryan Day, Brian Kelly, Jim Harbaugh, and Mike Gundy above him.
Okay.
Maybe not Jim Harbaugh. I'd probably have him at 8.
I would have no issue putting Brian Kelly above him, but Brian Kelly hasn't proven that. A, he can win a national championship, but I mean, he's at school now where he can. Like, yeah. Notre Dame's a little bit too hard, we'll see what Brian Kelly does recruiting wise now he doesn't have the Notre Dame restrictions on him. Ryan Day could probably put there too ahead of him, but again, Jimbo's got the national title. Lincoln Riley at number 4. He's 55-10 with 3 playoff appearances. It's a pretty damn good resume. We've got some shakeup, though. Dabo out of the top 2. He's now number 3. He's been passed by Kirby Smart and, of course, Nick Saban. Kirby Smart, second best coach in the country, Cam?
No, I don't think so. Until he figures out how to manage quarterbacks, I can't give him that.
Charlie, Kirby Smart, second best coach in the country?
Still 3rd for me.
Behind Dabo?
Yeah.
That boy?
Dabo, I mean, also has won national championships, and I think is still a better coach.
Okay. Dabo, to me, is not – I mean, I don't want to say
– I think he's trending down.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't want to say he's, like, in a similar position as Dave Aranda or anything. Or maybe even, like, not even like a Lane Kiffin. But I do feel like Dabo really needs a bounce back season. Like,
yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Dabo, again, not on the hot seat by any means. I'm not saying that. But, like, mm-hmm, if Dabo has another bad year, you can see Dabo being outside the top 5 on these rankings next year.
For sure.
Because now you look around, all those coordinators are gone.
I mean, yeah, you're like, oh, was it just that? Been propping them up a little bit?
And also, like, was it just having, like, ridiculous and maybe even lucky run of quarterbacks.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, outside the one Kelly Bryant year, you went from, what, Deshaun Watson to Trevor Lawrence?
Yeah, yeah.
That's a pretty good, like, 5-year run there of stud quarterbacks. And what happens when you don't have those two guys? Well, you didn't look very good with DJ Uiagalelei. Whatever the hell his name is.
Uiagalelei.
Yeah, you didn't look very good with DJ. So now what are you going to do? Can you fix him? Or are you going to have another year of bad quarterback play? Let's go to break. We'll talk about the NBA playoffs. Any other quarterback or, coaching thoughts here, Cam? Anything you want to say?
Not really. I don't know. Maybe it's my bias against Georgia, but I still don't think Kirby's the second best coach in college football. I mean, I think he's
been. You got Dabo ahead of him?
I would still put Dabo ahead of him.
Lincoln Riley ahead of him?
I don't think I'd put Lincoln there.
Jimbo?
Jimbo, no. I'm kind of sour on Jimbo as well.
Does Lincoln Riley win a national championship in the first 5 years at USC?
I'm going to say no, just because I think he needs the Pac-12 to be a little better as a whole.
I don't know if he has to have them be better as a whole, because I think they can lose one game. And, like, USC's a brand that will get the benefit of the doubt. They're not TCU. Mm-hmm. They're not Baylor. Enough. Like, if he only loses one game there and wins the Pac-12, he will get a playoff spot almost – you know, almost assuredly.
Fair enough.
I think he needs the Pac-12 to be better just so his team can be used to playing better teams.
Okay. Yeah. If that was your point, Cam, I apologize. I thought you just meant it's like get respect.
It's a little both, but I think I think people are really down on the Pac-12 right now just as a whole.
Sure.
I mean, I guess, what are the expectations for year one USC? Do people have them as like a top 10 team?
Yeah, like when we did when we read the preseason or the way too early top 25 or whatever, they came in at number 13. So like they're,
and I guess they have Utah as a top 10 team.
Mm-hmm.
They have Oregon, I think.
Dan
is
Lang
top
and
25.
Oregon should be pretty good. So like, I don't know about year one for Lincoln.
Kalen DeBoer at Washington. So you just got to hope that, I guess, some of those programs start to rise as USC rises.
I would expect USC to be in a playoff within 3 years, though, or else like we got to get Lincoln Riley outside this top four because he's got.
Yeah,
money behind him. Like they're tampering. They're doing all this stuff, and like they obviously are trying to throw money around. So
I don't think he ever wins a national championship at USC.
Okay, I'm not saying he will either. I'm just I think that's the expectation.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
I think we'll probably reach one eventually and just get beat by an SEC team.
We'll talk some NBA after the break. It's Talk Sports on Fan Run Radio. Coming up on the drive today, Tony Vitello going to be joining.
Ah, crypto bro.
We'll find out if he's a crypto bro.
I did ask Russell to ask him, and he said he would.
I also tweeted him, so hopefully Russell doesn't let us down, and hopefully he doesn't embarrass us when he asks. Mississippi State baseball coach Chris Loomis. That's how you spell Loomis? L-E-M-O-N-I-S is Loomis?
I don't know.
When asked about Tennessee, he said that Tennessee looks like one of the better teams in college baseball history. So,
the old prop up your opponent.
You've had some people say that, though, recently. But Tony Vitello will be on the drive, I believe, at 5 o'clock was what Russell said. Luca and Boban spotted in San Francisco enjoying a nice beer. A little patio beer. I guess the picture could theoretically be from yesterday, but it came out today.
I hope it's from today. I hope he would do this. We'll just grab a beer at lunch. It's fine.
I do love that there was a video, too, of that someone put together. It was just like splicing different cuts of the Suns like working out and getting it with Luca like smoking hookah and drinking beer. Someone said, man, if you ever starts drinking vodka sodas and switches to keto, the NBA is done for.
I feel like that's how some of those European guys just roll. I mean, they're just like, hey, let's like, I don't know, man.
I mean, like, you know, Jokic was fat for a while and then he got a little bit skinnier, but he still seems like he shows up always kind of a little bit out of shape.
Maybe the quotes about him and the 2 liters is still one of the funniest stories. Yeah.
Lamonis. By the way, I found the pronunciation guy.
Thank you. Last night, you had the Heat take advantage of an undermanned Celtics team, beat them up. That third quarter was one of the best responses to a first half that you'll see, because Boston went to the half up, I believe, what, up 8?
Yeah.
And then
people were already throwing out the, yeah, you know, it just seems like Boston's a better team. Yeah, it looks like Boston's going to be in the finals the first half.
I live bet the Heat at halftime.
What was the halftime line?
I think plus four,
plus 3.5.
Yeah, it was somewhere around there. Yeah. I can't remember what the money line was.
And then the Heat immediately came out, went on a 22-2 run, took a lead. Jason Tatum in the third quarter alone had 6 turnovers.
Oof.
He was a little disappointing last night.
Mm-hmm.
I know there's Celtics fans mad whenever you see Jimmy Butler go to the free throw line 18 times, but Jimmy Butler just an old man game. Took him old school. 41 points, 9 rebounds, and 5 assists. Didn't hit any three-pointers. 12 of 19 from the field, 17 of 18 from the free throw line, as he clearly dominated and out-dueled Jason Tatum as Miami holds serve in game one, goes up 1-0. Charlie, did you have any big takes from it?
I mean, the second half adjustments, obviously, 42 paint points in the first half for the Celtics, 6 in the second half.
Okay, I didn't see that. I did see they got their ass whooped in the first half in the paint, like near record levels.
Right, so I guess you can take that one of two ways. The Celtics have the ability to dog the Heat in the post a little bit, which could be concerning, or that the Heat figured out how to keep them out of the paint. You know, you can look at it one of two ways. I was glad
just
to
make
see-
Jason Tatum turn the ball over, and then if you don't,
because you know,
if you
the
turn
Celtics
the ball over,
did,
you don't get any shots.
The Celtics
in the paint.
Did beat us 3 out of 4 quarters.
Yeah,
you just happen to have that huge third, and I don't. You can't just rely on like 22-2 runs. Mm-hmm. So I mean, I don't know if this is any sort of indication like the Heat are, you know, built to. If you thought the Celtics were going to win this series, I don't think your opinion changes after game one. My biggest thing is I want to see Bam be more assertive, and I know we talked about that yesterday, but he was so huge in that Eastern Conference Finals. Like, he's been huge in the playoffs in the past, and he's shooting 4 shots. Like, Bam needs to be more important to this team offensively than just shooting 4 shots.
That's what I was saying. Yeah,
and I agreed with you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I've been saying that for a while. Like, yeah, sure, he does a good job of taking what he gets, and you're not really upset with him because he also provides – I mean, really, really good defense. That block that he had was beautiful to watch over, like, just over and over again on replay. But if he can be more aggressive, if he can kind of attack the middle of the court, the paint, just and make them have to put more into stopping that, then maybe the Heat shooting woes from three that have been there at times this playoff can ease off a little bit because the spacing's better because Bam Adebayo's scoring in the paint. So I think if he can just start shooting more and scoring more, then it'll open things up for Miami shooters as well. And I think that's the key to winning an NBA title was an assertive Bam.
Didn't need it last night, but yeah, I mean,
you can't rely on Jimmy for 40 every game.
No,
maybe we can.
Especially like,
it's just going to happen.
Especially if Bam's also like on the defense and being the defensive anchor that's given up near historic paint points. But second half, they figured it out. But that was a bad game one for Bam. He was the only starter. I guess that's not true. Struce was also a negative while on the floor. Well, at least Struce is out there trying to stretch it to floor a little bit. Mm-hmm. Tyler Hero got a good game from him last night.
Yep.
But, you know, I don't know if I changed my opinion about this series. I thought it was going to be a 7-game series before I saw game one. I probably leaned towards the Heat. I thought the Heat were – I thought it was a little disrespectful that they were, you know, plus 145 to win the series.
Yeah. I also don't think we expected Horford and Smart to be out game
one. Well, that's
one.
True. That's why I don't want to overreact either because – although Horford, if he's out 3 games, I mean,
that's a pretty big swing.
If you go down 3-0, I mean, surely Boston,
especially the way he's been playing.
Yeah. And, like, he's their Bam.
Mm-hmm.
And quite frankly, he's been better offensively in this playoffs than Bam has been. Right now, if you look at the series price, Miami's now minus 150, Boston plus 125. So not a drastic overreaction there, I don't think.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, I think it's going 7. Any thoughts about the Western Conference Finals tipping tonight? I mean, I don't want to do the draft that we usually do because I feel like it's going to be Luka number one and then like 4 Warriors maybe. Like
a good Steph. Oh, I think Brunson's up there, though. I think Brunson's important.
You're taking Brunson. I guess maybe you take Brunson over Klay.
I think Klay has the potential to have more impact on the series. But I think for the Mavericks to win, they need a good Brunson.
Sure, but if I'm just ranking the players in the series, I'm going Luka 1, Steph 2,
mm-hmm.
probably Draymond 3 just because of how important he's going to be for their defense and, you know, handling the ball. And then maybe Poole. Maybe I do Brunson before Klay, I don't know. But, like, if it gets to a Game 6, then I know I'm getting Michael Jordan.
Yeah, I was about to say, I'm drafting Game 6 Klay first.
Sure.
Then Luka, then Steph. Then Draymond, like you said, for his defense. Then Poole. And then Brunson. And then games 1 through 5 and also game 7, Klay.
Yeah. Yeah. Golden State favored in this series. But Last night you saw Jimmy Butler outplay Jason Tatum. I don't know if there'll be any games this series where I feel like Steph outplays Luka. Like, I don't think there's going to be a game this series where I feel like any of the Warriors can outplay Luka.
I agree there.
I have confidence that at one point Tatum will get the best of Jimmy in a game. Right? Like, we all agree on that. Like, Jimmy, yeah. Tatum's going to outplay him at least one of these games. Like, he has the ability to go and, like, we know it's even with him.
For sure.
Or at least, you know, like, before the series, we thought Tatum was better. And, you know, after game one, obviously Jimmy looked better. But, like, I don't know if there's ever going to be a time where it feels like Steph is better than Luka in this series.
I don't think anybody's going to come close. Unless you get one of those, like, really hot Klay Thompson throwback quarters.
But even then, it's just going to be him scoring 25 points and not doing anything offensively. Like, that makes, like, everyone else better.
Yeah. Maybe if he can get back his defensive chops he used to have randomly.
Which, that's going to be interesting to see how they try to guard Luka. Is it just going to be like Wiggins? Because I feel like everyone else on the floor is going to try to get switched off onto Luka. Like, Luka's going to be hunting that matchup for everyone. And I was going to say, except Draymond.
Yeah,
but hell,
Wiggins and Draymond may be the only people you kind
of
trust.
But I don't know if like Draymond can like stay in front of Luka on the perimeter.
I don't think he can, really.
On the other side of the ball, like, I wouldn't be surprised if you saw Luka just guard Draymond either. Like, you might be able to kind of hide Luka a little bit better defensively on the other side.
Yeah, honestly. And, I mean, Dallas went 3-1 against them in the regular season, which, you know, always doesn't matter.
Sure, translate. I don't even know if Steph played, you know, how many of those games.
Yeah,
or...
I don't either off the top of my head. But I do think the Mavericks can win the series. Luka's been a problem, man. He's been a problem. I think he's like he's arriving. You know, obviously it already arrived, but
it has the makings level of his moment to maybe somehow win a championship and then actually like kind of fulfill the prophecy of like being the next LeBron James and like it kind of becoming his league.
Yeah, and I feel like on top of that, like the Warriors, I don't think you really got many games where all of them were consistently on. Like, you'll have somebody struggling or something like that. I think for them to win the series, you're going to have to get a good Steph, you know, Klay Thompson hitting his shots, Poole being a factor, and, you know, Draymond making plays.
I don't feel like they really played very well against Memphis, honestly.
I don't think they did either.
They played good in game three,
mm-hmm.
where they, you know, hit all their shots and went 142 to, like, 112.
Yeah.
But outside of that, like, I thought Memphis pretty much outplayed them or played them even for all except the last like 4 minutes of game six where Klay put them down.
Yeah. No, yeah, Memphis gave them all they could handle. I mean, of the first like three games, like you mentioned, played well in game three, beat them down. But like those first couple games, super close games, obviously one's a loss, other one's a 1-point game and you could have easily lost. Like Memphis probably feels like they should have won that you know, that series there, but I don't know. Yeah, you haven't got completely consistent play from the Warriors, and I think you need to be a little more consistent as a team for him to win, because you know Luka's gonna be on.
I mean, at the same time, he didn't get a consistent play from the Mavericks either.
Yeah, but they always had Luka. Like, Luka was a lock, and you just hope that you get that second guy to step up, and for them, for most of the time, it's been Brunson that's been the guy that did it.
I mean, the Mavericks,
Finney Smith did it one game, but...
The Mavericks are winning this series. Like, that's how I feel. Like, unless they just completely lose their mind shooting-wise, like, I just don't see a world where Golden State can guard Luka, and I don't see a world where they can stay in front of Dinwiddie and Brunson. Like, I feel like those guys are going to have a layup line.
I do think Dinwiddie's going to be a big factor in this game, because I think he kind of was quiet first half of the last series, and then he woke up the last couple games, really, and I think that's what kind of put them over the edge to get that win.
Last call on the other side is Talk Sports on Fan Run Radio.
Your heating and air system.
Last call here on the program is brought to you by the Knoxville-based law offices of G. Turner Howard III. If you or a loved one has been injured in an accident, they want to help you get the compensation that you deserve. At G3, you matter most. Visit G3HelpMe.com or call them at 865-401-8214 to get help now. That's G3HelpMe.com. Once again, G3HelpMe.com. Got a couple minutes left. Let's play some Pump the Brakes. Cam, what do you got?
I got Wisconsin, man.
Oh. Is this an update on the guy who like killed those guys and buried them out on his land?
Oh no, I need to see if I can find that happened? Story.
Remember we had that guy, like some people came up on his land and ended up missing, and we all think they thought they got killed. I don't know.
Nothing about that.
Yeah.
I'll have to see if I can find it, but no, this Wisconsin man hits a milestone. He has officially eaten a Big Mac every day for 50 years. He holds a place in the world record. Celebrated 50 years of eating his favorite McDonald's sandwich on Tuesday. First ordered his first Big Mac back in 1972. Since then, he's eaten a Big Mac every day. He ate his 30,000th Big Mac in 2018. Became the first person to eat the most Big Macs as recorded by the Guinness Book of World Records.
Do we have a picture of this guy?
Oh, yes. And he looks exactly like somebody that eats a Big Mac every day.
Man, that's sad. So he's just leaning into it?
I guess, but I don't have to show you a picture of this guy, but yeah,
that's not what I thought he would look like.
Okay.
But he definitely still looks like a guy that eats a lot of Big Macs.
So is he fat?
No.
Oh, he's not fat.
But he just...
Well, when you say exactly what I thought he would look like, I thought he was going to be fat, Cam.
Okay. Well,
anyway, he
looks like a super weird guy.
Okay. You got a picture of him, Charlie? Charlie, can I see him?
He's got this bowl cut and these big old sideburns going down.
That's a weird looking guy.
No. Is that a ponytail? Or?
I think he has a bowl cut with a ponytail.
And I like how he's eating this next to a sign. It says 50 years of Big Mac. Like, I guess does he go to the same McDonald's every time, I guess?
Does he make any alterations? Does he at least take off that meaningless, like, other bun that's in the middle of it? Like, that's such a waste. Why do we need that other bun?
Can't tell from the picture while he's eating it. I feel like he goes just normal. I think he's just traditional. He said, I got a comic of somebody saying I was going to die of heart attack within 15,000 Big Macs. Now I'm over 30,000. I'm still alive. It's not really the food you eat. It's your lifestyle. If you're lazy, I probably would have gained a lot of weight. But because I'm so active, I burn off only calories. Huh.
I mean, this has got to be huge for McDonald's. Like, if they want to use this to prop up Big Macs. Like, hey, this guy's eaten them for, you said, it was 50 years or 30 years?
50 years.
For 50 years, and he's alive.
And he's skinny-ish.
He's just alive. Like, that should be the point you're hammering home.
This would go back on that supersize me. This is their counter to supersize me.
He didn't get up supersized, though. Is he eating fries, too?
Yeah, he's got a whole little meal here. He's got a large drink.
God. Does he walk there like Jared, at least? Like,
I don't see any fries on his plate, but he's got a large drink and his Big Mac. I don't know. Who knows? There's some crutches in the corner. Are those his?
Oh, I hope not.
I hope not. Huh. But yeah, man likes Big Macs.
I just feel sick thinking about
a Big Mac every day. What would you eat every day?
Chicken nachos, grilled.
From where? You have to get them from somewhere.
Broadway Brew House in Nashville. A half order.
So you're just going to be in Nashville for 50 years in a row? You said he ate it every day for 50 years?
Yeah, I guess. I didn't think that through.
You got to try it.
Either that or like Lido's Pizza.
How would he... 10 chicken nuggets from Wendy's every day.
Yeah. I'd probably eat a pub sub.
I'd rather
just
eat a cold dish, right?
Or half a pub sub every day.
You'd have to eat for both meals if I got a full pub sub, but like you said, a half.
A half of
one slice of thin crust Pizza Hut pizza.
One slice.
Did eat some thin crust pizza this weekend. Boy, was it good. The drive's up next. Stay locked in on Fan Run Radio.